Well, hello and howdy there, good librarians. Bet you never thought you'd hear my dulcet tones again now, did ya? I'm gonna tell you what I've been going through this past 7 years since the last podcast. Yeah, that's right. 7 fucking years. And I'm happy to announce that since the surgery, I'm 7 years cancer-free. Yay for me. What you didn't know was that I had what my psychiatrist called a total meltdown. Therapy didn't work, and neither did the 27 different kinds of pills that were tried on me. This all occurred during the time I had surgery for an arthritic hip and got a new metal hip and got the scar to prove it. I was diagnosed as manic depressive, which is now being called bipolar disease. My super duper psychologist figured that one out. Then I was told by my orthopedist that I needed a new left knee. I thought that what the hell? If it was as easy as the hip, I was all for it. It wasn't. I never hurt so much in my entire life. I couldn't sleep. I hated being awake. I just in general hated everything and everybody because I hurt so bad. That's when the Library of the Living Dead Press went into the dump. I'm so sorry for that. Please, please, please forgive me. I had no other choice. I couldn't do it anymore. There was just too many things coming down on top of me. Well, then they tried me on the opioids. I got hooked immediately. They continued upping the amount and strength of the pills until I was finally hooked on full-strength morphine. And you know what? None of them worked. I finally flushed all of those fucking pills down the toilet, went cold turkey, and finally beat the addiction. My knees still hurt like a sumbitch, but I would only take Advil for the pain. Finally, physical therapy and a good wife did away with the pain, and I'm better now. Still bipolar, but better. You know? My wife got sick and tired of me going to work and then just laying around the house when I came home. She told me, "Mike, you used to have a real talent for your podcast." And yes, folks, she's a good librarian too. And then the proverbial light lit above my head. And the rest is recent history. New computer, new headphones, new microphone, but the same old podcast. So, if I'm remembering right, sound of contemplation. This is episode number 122 of the Library of the Living Dead. You are welcome here.
Yeah. in his mind. Zombies of all kinds in his head, in his head. There are zombies with the books and movies and stories in his head, in his head. There are zombies in his head.
In 2007, an accident at a clandestine U.S. government facility in rural West Virginia released several test subjects infected with a highly contagious necrotic virus. Government operatives, military units, and private forces are sent into Appalachia with orders to quietly eliminate all traces of the infected subjects, including secondary infections. The fiercely independent, close-knit nature of the people in the rough, isolated hills and deep spreading through the rural populace faster than its carriers can be found and destroyed. In a matter of days, the virus is carried throughout southern and central West Virginia as the dead spread through the hills and into the small mountain communities. The rapidly failing government conspiracy leaves no room for warning the populace of the coming zombie hordes. Rural doctors in the small, ill-equipped regional hospitals that dot the countryside rush the newly infected to hospitals in the more heavily populated areas of the state, inadvertently sending the virus biting and clawing into tens of thousands more. Days later, the virus appears in northern Virginia and southwestern Pennsylvania, forcing the declaration of martial law. Within 3 weeks of the initial outbreak, the federal government and the Department of Homeland Security are forced to publicly announce the crisis. The bulk of West Virginia and slices of Virginia and Pennsylvania are placed under strict quarantine. Defensive lines are fortified, and nothing is allowed in or out, damning those missed in the short period of evacuations to a living hell and locking away the real truth of the virus's creation. Publicly announcing the fears that the virus could be used to create the ultimate terrorist weapon, the United States government transfers the responsibility of maintaining the quarantine from the military to the Department of Homeland Security, which christens it Area 187. Hundreds of thousands of lawsuits and claims are dismissed under Homeland's broad anti-terror legislation, as government and military leaders and the research and development corporations involved in the development of the virus scramble to cover their involvement. Years pass. Homeland Security develops and enforces a total news blackout. Dozens of laws are passed granting sweeping authority to maintain the security of the area using whatever means Homeland deems fit. Conspiracies continue to thrive outside the now immense defensive wall, and mercenaries known as grave robbers regularly slip in and out of the area, stealing valuables and taking contracts to bring back specific items for well-paying customers. Area 187, almost hell, begins in the year 2014, 7 years after the initial outbreak. We follow Josephine Turrell, a network television reporter, and John Heath, a former Air Force search and rescue team leader and area survivor, as they risk their lives from both the dead and the living to go back into Area 187 to rescue a group of survivors. Josephine is looking for the story of the century, one that will prove survivors still exist inside the area and that Homeland has been covering up their existence. Heath reluctantly joins her after he sees what may be his wife, Eileen, in a video message smuggled out of the area from a group claiming to be trapped survivors. Death will follow their every step as the pair makes their way through the blasted, nightmarish landscape of the hungering dead. But the peril offered by the mindless corpses becomes second to the danger presented by the living. Boom, boom.
shadow of my breath from the blood in your neck. I hold my soul from the lands unknown so I can play the strings of your blood. My body's a
Arc-sodium lights turned the night to day as far out as he could see. The zone had been deforested as much as was possible, the monthly chemical drops ensuring nothing green could sprout to provide concealment. Vast networks of pressure plates, sensors, video cameras, and other electronic monitoring systems had been deployed in the zone over the years. More than 3,000 men had lost their lives in the 18 months it had taken in the initial push to establish the monitoring network and fortification lines that walled the plague off from the rest of humanity. Even today, the zone could be counted on to kill at least a dozen or so a year, by official numbers, from work groups like this one tasked with maintaining it. They moved at a fast walk over the gray-green stubble. Running reduced the ability to fight and think to near zero, and considering their enemy couldn't move faster than a walk themselves, it was practically unnecessary in all but a swarm situation, or to get to a better firing position. Union rules forbid Mari from going into the area armed, though few technicians ventured out without at least a personal firearm. Mari had decided not to arm himself, though. He had no experience and worried that he would be found with the weapon and disciplined. Best to leave the guns to the soldiers. He kept his eyes locked squarely on Coulson's thick neck ahead of him as the group made their way smoothly and silently across the daylit sparseness. They made the steel pole at just over the 10-minute mark. A high-pitched tone sounded through their earpieces as Coulson brought the group to a halt. Using hand signals, he positioned his men at the compass points around the base of the pole and took the northern point himself, facing into the great unknown of Area 187. Without looking behind him, Coulson tripped the go tone to Mari's earpiece. The technician hesitated for a moment, swallowed hard, then threw his climbing belt around the pole. Mari scaled the tower, his childhood fear of heights falling to the onslaught of adrenaline. He'd been a high school kid in Palisades, California when the outbreak hit, making jokes about redneck zombies roaming the hills of West Virginia and eating their cousins instead of having sex with them. Now he hung 25 feet over that very ground, suspended only by a strip of ballistic nylon. Mari rolled up his hood, pulled the cover off the sensor relay module, and turned on the small pendlet attached to the band around his head. He poked around the masses of thin wires with a rubber-coated screwdriver, then moved his face closer to peer at a particular clump of wires bound with electrical tape. The thick, red power wire had a charred spot just beyond the tape, causing a short to the sensor relay and denying it reports from its clusters for a half mile around. Someone had thrown this non-regulation repair together, obviously some time ago by the faded appearance of the tape.
He prodded a bit more and found the long-ago tech had wired the sensor relay directly into the main power line that fed the light a few feet above him. The amperage coming through the pole's electrical service had been far too strong for the delicate wire, causing it to burn like a candle wick. Further probing showed the reason for the jerry-rigged repair, a crispy, blackened spot on the relay's motherboard where the live wire should have been soldered. He pulled his radio and stared at the multicolored buttons. Each was assigned a tone. Pressing two or more at the same time produced a combined tone, further widening the menu of commands and responses. The problem was remembering them all. Mario pulled the hard plastic card from his coveralls and read through the options, trying to find the proper code for a mission scrub. He found it and pushed the orange, red, and black buttons together. The result was an uncomfortable tone of medium pitch, like three dogs barking in unison. Almost immediately he heard another tone. A quick check of the card and watching for which colors lit up on his radio found he was being asked for a status report. So just how the hell could he explain that the last guy that shimmied up this pole had thrown a band-aid on a major sensor relay and a new wiring harness and motherboard was what was needed to make it all better? What combination of buttons was that? Mario scanned the card again and found the code for repair beyond tool slash part capability and punched it in. He was rewarded with a thin, piercing tone. You didn't need special training to know that wasn't good regardless of the circumstances. Moments later, Coulson's whispered voice came over his earpiece.
What the fuck is the problem up there?
The last guy up here fixed a problem with chewing gum and it's failed. I need parts I don't have to fix it right. There was a long pause, then Coulson's voice again.
Can you fix it wrong until we get another detail out here in the morning? That sensor you're playing with is blinding control for a half a square mile.
Mario poked around the box, considering his options. I'll need to bring the pole down to do it. All the electrical in a given sector junctions off from the main pole. It's just our luck that's the one I'm hanging off of right now. Every pressure plate, infrared sensor, camera, light array, everything for this sector will be down while I relink the power supply to the relay. Why the hell did they schedule this shit at night?
Just fucking do it,
Coulson interrupted.
Control, do you copy?
Copy, Lieutenant. Technician, please advise.
Shut down main power to... Mario looked around the pole for a moment before he found the brass identification tag. Unit 127 at 36 and 30. All services will be affected.
Estimated time to complete repair?
Just as quick as I can get it done, ma'am.
Power to Unit 127 at 36 and 30 will be shut down in 10 seconds, Mark. Detail, we will attempt to keep visual for the duration of the lights out from other surveillance points in neighboring sectors. Use extreme caution. We will have limited monitoring capacity until the unit is powered up. Resume radio silence. Control out.
Mario froze when the small hum from the large torch above him faded away along with its light. They still had some illumination from other poles spaced 50 yards to either side, just enough to make out the tree line ahead. That light did little to help Mario at this height. He pulled another flashlight from his belt and hung it from his harness, pointing the light into the control box to add to his penlight's feeble illumination. Mario pulled a tool roll from his belt, hung it from a hook on the pole, selected a pair of pliers, and started his work. Coulson could sense a tension from his men. They'd been in worse spots, but that hadn't been for a few years now.
So far, so good, he thought.
He kept his eyes moving over the line of trees ahead that marked the true start of Area 187, watching and listening for any motion or sound. Those things out there weren't smart, their intellect lower than that of most animals. But they could tell when something changed, when something moved or stopped moving, or when light that had been there suddenly wasn't. If there were any of them within sight of the zone that had been looking this way when the light was powered down, the sudden change in the environment could give them cause to investigate. Coulson cocked his head towards the wood line, his ear a better early warning than his eyes in the now gloom of their little part of the buffer zone. Mario snipped several wires, then put a screwdriver to the brackets that held the offending gadgetry in place. While his conscious mind was on its assigned task, his subconscious couldn't help but have great fun mulling over the myriad dangers of his current predicament. He paused to wipe away the sweat threatening his eyes with his free hand as his subconscious treated him to a vision of dozens of moaning zombies swarming around the base of his pole, glazed eyes staring up at him. He'd never seen one of them personally, but he'd seen enough television reports from the early days before the news blackouts went into effect for his mind to come up with vivid images to lend authenticity to the thought. He fought to keep his hands from shaking and stay focused on the job while the belly of his mind toyed with the idea of jagged, broken teeth tearing into his flesh. I can't believe they expect me to work like this! Coulson's head swiveled up to him just then, catching his attention. Mario's cheeks reddened at his area faux pas, and he turned back to his work just as a low buzzing sound caught his ear. He tapped on his earpiece, thinking that the speaker was malfunctioning or picking up interference. That's when he saw the dull yellow and black spots coming from behind an inspection plate. In moments, a small cloud of hornets filled the air around him, registering their distaste for his intrusions. He swatted at them and nearly lost his grip as several of the winged warriors landed on his exposed hands and cheeks, burying their venom deep in his skin. Pain shot through Mara as he struggled to keep his body against the pole. He reached for his transmitter and frantically punched the buttons as the hornets continued their assault, not caring what combination of tones he made. The men reacted instantly to the cacophony in their ears. Three of them shifted to a pyramid formation on the base of the pole while Coulson fell back and turned his eyes skyward to the whimpering technician. Mari's whimpers turned to hoarse screams as his tools and flashlight fell from his lofty perch, pelting the men below as his cries rang through their ears from his microphone.
Control! Control! Operation to scrub! Kid's freaking out! Get an extraction team ready!
A sudden tone, high and piercing, drowned out his words. Any soldier in the buffer zone knew that tone. Contact. Coulson turned to his former point and watched over one of his men's shoulders as several distinct forms shambled from the dark trees.
Control?
Coulson said, his voice still low and modulated.
Contact confirmed. Get that extraction team out here. Now.
Fall back.
Control's voice came to them.
Negative, Control. You still have a man up the pole.
Coulson looked up at Mari. He'd stopped his frantic movements but continued moaning and wailing, a beacon in the dark for the dead.
Mari! Report! Damn it, kid!
Technician's communications have been terminated. Fall back.
Coulson turned back and saw the six figures had become a dozen, their moans adding to Mari's pained bleating as they stumbled and limped towards his men. The moaning would bring more of them, the dire, maddening sound a precursor to swarming. Anything dead within a mile would come to investigate like farmhands to a dinner bell. They were closing, the leaders of the pack now less than 10 yards away.
Control, power up the light.
He could feel his men tense, the muzzles of their silenced weapons already drawing beads on their targets. Coulson cursed under his breath, glanced once more up the pole, then trained his weapon on the growing horde ahead of them.
You heard Gladys' voice. Fall back. Port arms, go to batons.
The men reacted immediately to his order and let their small submachine guns rest against their chests as they pulled back from the pole. Almost as one, they deployed their thick steel batons, the polished, blackened, and heavily oiled steel strong enough to crack a skull or shatter vertebrae with a single strike. The crowd had reached the pole now. A few of them turned their heads to look up at Mari's dangling body, his own soft moaning crowding them around the pole.
Control, we've got a tail,
Coulson said as a half dozen of them continued plodding after them, the slow-speed chase almost comical.
Scratch the team, that'll just work them up more. We need a diversion. Get these guys to stop thinking about us long enough to get back inside.
Coulson sighed out loud, his finger itching to touch off a burst from his weapon into the advancing zombies.
Control, drop the bit on my mark,
he said as he put his baton away and raised his machine gun. Mari managed to open his swollen eyes to slits. He'd been horribly allergic to most stinging insects throughout his childhood. It had been so long since he'd been stung, he didn't even carry an epinephrine pen anymore. With the volume of stings he'd acquired, the little spring-loaded syringe would have been like pissing on a forest fire, though. The venom had swelled more than his eyes. His throat had constricted to a wheezing moan, and his fingers had swollen to the size of sausages. He felt his weight supported solely by the safety belt, his hands useless now for holding onto the pole. He was dangling, helpless, with a chorus of moans pulsing up to him. Mari's mind was too far gone from the pain to register panic, but not far enough to ignore the predicament. All he had to do was stay calm and hold out until they came back to get him. Just stay calm, keep himself from swinging on his lifeline, and wait for someone to get him down. If it wasn't for the ringing in his ears, he may have heard the hiss of a silenced report from Coulson's weapon, a soft sound that would have carried easily in the deathly stillness of the buffer zone. The next sound he heard was the bullet smashing through his skull, the guarantee he wouldn't rise again. The last thing Mari heard just after the shot was a small explosion like a pistol being fired next to his head as Control detonated the tiny charge rigged into the safety latch of his belt. Mari was dead before he hit the ground, the ghouls falling upon the fresh meat like slow-motion sharks.
Hit the E-lights,
Coulson says. He lowered his weapon and pulled out a thick pair of black lens goggles.
Put your blinders on, boys.
The men and his fire team copied their leader and pulled on their own goggles just as several brilliant shafts of light bathed the buffer zone from the powerful halogen searchlights that ran the length of the battlement behind them. The light pierced the decaying eyes of the zombies, stopping them in their tracks and forcing them to turn away. Their heads turned from Coulson's fire team, they now saw their brethren feasting on the body of the dead technician behind them. Almost as one, they crept back the way they'd come, the scent of fresh blood from the human carrion drawing them to join the rest. Enter the deadlands of Area 187 with a new novel, Area 187, Almost Hell by Eric R. Lowther. Published by Library of the Living Dead Press and available now in both paperback and Kindle versions from Amazon.com. The dead are waiting for you.
Thank you. Give me some ammo for my shotgun. I ain't got no time to last very long. Oh, the lonely days are here, I'll be staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. I don't care how many of those things I gotta kill. Oh, I just can't leave my home again. Oh, the lonely days are here, I'll be staying home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. She wrote me a letter, said it was a letter from the dead. Listen to me, people, don't forget my words, my baby's undead. Anyway, give me some paper and a pencil. I've still got all those things to kill. Oh, the lonely days are here, I've been staying at home. My baby, she wrote me a letter. Baby done wrote me a letter. My baby 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 wrote me a letter. From the dead. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. My baby wrote me a letter. My baby wrote me a letter from the dead. From the dead.
Dear Mom, I'm sorry I didn't get to see you at the nursing home. I tried. I really did. But the parking lot was full of those dead things, some of them even in wheelchairs. I tried to park and get out of the car, but Mrs. Bernstein was next to my car and took a bite out of my arm. It hurt like hell. I never realized how sharp dentures could be. A group of them had Dr. Kubicki down on the grass and were eating him. He was screaming like a little girl. I guess he had a right to. The car is surrounded by those things, and I don't think I can make a break for the front door. I am really sorry, Mom. I'd love to see you one more time. I've really missed you, and your cooking. Your lasagna was the best. My arm is on fire. I'll most likely turn soon. Then I'll be with those dead folks in the parking lot. But wait, I see you at the front door. You're staggering like your hip is really killing you. and your eyes are all white. But I don't care. I can get one more hug from my mom. I'll be happy then. At least if I can get to you. I'm leaving this note in the glove box. Maybe someone will care. Here I come, Mom. Mike.
Well, it's 8 o'clock and it's still light.
A lot of good the extra daylight does us. Now, we've still got a 3-hour drive back. We're not going to be home until after midnight.
Well, if it really bugged you, Johnny, you wouldn't do it.
You think I want to blow Sunday on a scene like this? You know, I figure we're either going to have to move Mother out here or move...
Hey, Tom, it's Bob from the office down the hall. It's good to see you, buddy. How have you been? Things have been okay for me. Except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI, you're all gonna die screaming. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. If you open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brains. I don't wanna nitpick, Tom, but is this really your plan? Spend your whole life locked inside a mall. Maybe that's okay for now, but someday you'll be out of food and guns, and you'll have to make the call. I'm not surprised to see you haven't thought it through enough. You never had the head for all that bigger picture stuff. But Tom, that's what I do, and I plan on eating you slowly.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. Guess we'll table this for now. I'm glad to see you take constructive criticism well. Thank you for your time. I know we're all busy as hell. And we'll put this thing to bed when I bash your head open.
All we wanna do is eat your brains.
We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes.
All we wanna do
compromise. Open up the doors, we'll all come inside and eat your brains.
Octopus's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. Octopus's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. Octopus's Manic Minute Movie Mutilation. Here we go. We start right now. There'll be no hesitation. In this episode, we'll be a perusing and talking about one of the worst zombie movies I've ever had the displeasure to view. It smells, good librarian. Smells like a dog fart. So let's begin. The location is an office, Natch, but they try to make it like Office Space with zombies. Ugh. The lead characters want to make everybody happy. Now, ain't that just as sweet as maple syrup? Problem is, their process. With an EKG electrode taped to this dude's head and an electrical stimuli, big word, I know, to turn his brain into Happyville. Then bam, it don't work. Just like this movie didn't work. He turns into a zombie, and then the fun begins. Terrible zombies, terrible FX, terrible acting, make for a, wait for it, dead movie. Stay away from this fucker, good librarians. I give Office of the Dead 1 severed thumb up out of 10. P.U. Bring on that dog fart. That's it for the podcast, good librarians. Thanks for listening. Got a little bit of out stuff to take care of. Our email is lotld@outlook.com. That's lotld@outlook.com. There's a brand spanking new forum found at, all lowercase, goodlibrarians.freeforums.org. The podcast is all zombie all the time. Send your short stories, promos, and letters from the dead to lotld@outlook.com. You'll have them read on a future podcast, which is pretty cool. If you'd like to do a promo and want to do it yourself, please send it in MP3 format. If you send in a letter from the dead or a short story, make sure it's in doc format. I'll try to get out a new podcast each and every week, but I need your help. Send that stuff into the email. And again, I apologize for how Library of the Living Dead Press went under. That was totally my fault, but I had a total meltdown and just couldn't do it anymore. We had 95 books I was trying to juggle, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So, please forgive me. And now, let's go out with a song!
Zombies are on the loose, be courageous. They're totally disgusting, their condition is contagious. They'll try to bite your body, but don't let them. The situation's getting worse, we better go get them. Zombie apocalypse, the day has come, the party starts. Look out for raggedy people with rotten body parts. Don't drink water from a contaminated source. It's time to do battle with a reanimated corpse. Prepare yourself physically and mentally steady, yes. They're known for the muddy dress, their face is a bloody mess. Zombie invasion, the problem's international. Don't try to reason with them, zombies are irrational. These are dead people. Imagine how they smell. If you're bitten, then you become a zombie yourself. They don't eat raisins or peanuts or chocolate chips. Shoot them in the head. It's the zombie apocalypse.
Zombie to life. Zombie to life. Zombies are coming to get you tonight. Zombie to life. Zombie to life. Zombies are coming to get you tonight. Zombie to life. Zombie to life. Zombies are coming to get you tonight. Zombie to life. Zombie to life.
Why is this happening? People are frantic. The military military's overwhelmed, widespread panic. Cities are destroyed and the streets run red. How do we contain this plague of the undead? Weaponize thyself, calling the troops. Zombies have the tendency to mobilize in large groups. There's very little information and no answers. One weird thing is that they're excellent dancers. Watch this. From hell, revitalized remains. The only thing they know how to say is the word brains. That's all they're interested in is your gray matter. Hey, batter, hit them in the head and they may splatter. The zombie tsunami is out of control. Hide in your basement or go on patrol. The world is being pillaged of its beauty and its worth. Brain dead zombies are taking over planet Earth.
Zombie to life, zombie to life. Zombies on coming to the night. Zombie to life, zombie to life.
This.